welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. With me today is my good friend and semiconductor legend, Wally Rhines. Good morning, Wally, and welcome back.
Good morning, Daniel. Glad to be here.
So, Wally, I just read that you may have won an award. Do you want to talk about that first?
Okay, yeah. It was an amazing honor. It's the Morris Chang Exemplary Leadership Award of the Global Semiconductor Association. It's a real honor. It's a very selective set of people who've received this. It's done by a panel of peers, a very detailed selection process, and it's named after Morris Chang, a person who changed the whole semiconductor industry more than once, both at Texas Instruments and then later as the founder of Taiwan Semiconductor.
Yeah, I'm looking at the award, the people who won the award, and the first one was 1999, was Morris Chang, of course, and I tell you, it's the who's who of the semiconductor industry. In fact, remember, these awards usually were live, and it was a big production. It was like the Emmys or the Oscars, right? I mean, you've attended a few, I would expect.
I have indeed, yeah, a big event. I can't quite do that this year. But people came in from all over the world. It's not uncommon to have 1,500 or more people at the event.
Yeah. So, did they highlight any specific achievements, or how did they merit this award?
Well, they did. They discussed things, and they've done videos that they'll be showing at the awards from, different phases of my career in the semiconductor industry. At Stanford, they focused on the work I did with Herb Maruska on the development of magnesium-doped gallium nitride blue LEDs that formed the basis for what actually became a Nobel Prize.
Right.
At TI, mostly on the development of the single chip digital signal processor and its derivatives that became a big part of TI's business, but also products like Speak and Spell and others that got some publicity. And then finally at Mentor, Caliber, which started actually at TI through a licensing program with Mentor, and then we developed the current generation right after I got to Mentor, and it became very important for physical verification for the industry and very important for Mentor as well.
Yeah, but this is kind of a special thing, right? Because, I mean, you have a long-standing personal relationship with Morris starting at TI, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Morris actually got his PhD at Stanford, and Gerald Pearson was on his committee, and Gerald was on mine. So when I was finishing my degree, Gerald just said, "Don't worry about a job, I'll take care of it." And he called up Morris, and Morris got me a bunch of interviews there, and I ended up going to TI. And then after I got there, I interacted with him quite a bit because he became head of the whole semiconductor business about a year after I got there. And I had a couple projects, one the development of a dynamic RAM, the 4K dynamic RAM, and the other a CCD imager that Morris had a personal involvement in. So I got to know him, and he stayed in contact after he left TI. And then when he went back to Taiwan, so I visited him very regularly, starting about 1988 when he was head of ITRI, and then later URSO, the R&D organizations. And then after he founded TSMC, I still see him almost every year. Didn't because of COVID this last year, but in general, he is a very loyal person and invites me to dinner. In fact, he even gets irritated if I don't contact him when I'm there.
Yeah, he's still going strong. It's quite amazing. I just saw an interview with him, which maybe we can touch on a little bit later. But by the way, why was it named after Morris? I'm not even sure.
Yeah, the Global Semiconductor Association started out as the Fabless Semiconductor Association.
Right. Yeah.
And More than any other single person, Morris was responsible for making the fabless model work. I think he saw it as a viable approach back when most of us thought running wafer fabs was the worst thing about the semiconductor industry. And he did some unique things, and one of them was to keep Taiwan Semiconductor focused on just providing manufacturing services for its customers. It didn't try to compete with them as most of the other foundries of that day did.
Yeah, you know, I was just looking at the award winners, and it's the who's who. In fact, the EDA elite and the semiconductor elite, and your friend and mine, Gordon Campbell. That's quite a coincidence, huh?
Absolutely. So Gordy Campbell really, more than any other person, was the leading developer of the companies that benefited from Silicon Foundries. Gordy started Chips and Technologies. That was the first major semiconductor company that's right from the start was dedicated to using foundries, to being totally fabless. He started out using Toshiba and Fujitsu, but he became worried about their conflicts with their own products, and so he switched over to TSMC, and he was named for the Morris Chang Award in 2007.
Yeah, and that's a good transition for what I want to talk to you about next is the funding you got for Cordami, and of course, Gordy is the founder or one of the founders of Cordami.
He is. He's the original. Three people came together 10 years ago and founded Cordami, which is named for a tsunami, of course, for multi-core computing. Gordy's the chairman. I'm now the CEO. But like Chips and Technologies, Cordami's a company that can really change an industry, probably even more so than CNT was.
Yeah, you know, I remember having dinner with you maybe a year and a half so ago, and you told me that you were taking the CEO. The first thing you were going to, you know, work on is raising funding. And this is right at the beginning of the pandemic. And, you know, I remember thinking, how is he going to do this during the pandemic? But I saw the announcement, Wally, $50 million from and led by SoftBank. That's just incredible.
Yeah, we were delighted. It's a great vote of confidence by the investors who really want to catch the next major wave of innovation. In this case, Cordami offers the opportunity to make computer privacy possible through fully homomorphic encryption. And fully homomorphic encryption is going to be a very big factor in the future.
Well, so let's talk about that. What is fully homomorphic encryption?
Well, we abbreviate it as FHE. It was invented 10 years ago at Stanford University by Craig Gentry, who was a PhD student at the time. It's the first encryption approach that promises to be quantum proof. That is, almost all of the security on the internet today will be capable of being broken when quantum computers get above 1,000 qubits. But as far as we know, FHE will not. With FHE, the thing that's unique is your data always remains encrypted. You encrypt it. You send it to the cloud, and all the computation is performed on the data without ever decrypting it. No one else has a key. Results are returned to you still in encrypted form. So your data always remains secure with the best known encryption, both during the transmission and during the computation.
Great. You know, that sounds great, but where's it been? Why hasn't the world adopted FHE today if it's that secure?
Yeah, you would think. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it?
It does.
There is a minor problem. The computation is so complex that it runs too slowly to run even on a standard Intel or NVIDIA server. It's really not practical for most applications. To perform the same calculation under FHE that you would on plain text data, a computer would have to be about a million times as fast. If you want to run it in the same time. So that's why Cordami is so unique. Cordami started as a software company. Its compiler technology called TrueStream and converts the application into a totally independent stream or streams of data and control. And a chip is now being designed to implement that software in hardware. And that requires a share nothing architecture. So each stream is totally independent of any other. There's no shared memory. And so you can scale from chip to chip and server to server. So if you want to double the performance, you just double the number of processors. And there's a lot of companies have already gotten into the game. Companies like IBM and a lot of smaller companies are already helping customers to port their applications to open source FHE interfaces.
So are you going to be a chip company, or is this you're proving the technology on the silicon?
No, we are certainly proving it on the silicon, but we are going to be a chip company probably initially, though we will provide remote access for people who want to test it out. But inadvertent disclosure of confidential information is so costly in the industry today, probably well over $1 trillion a year in fines and litigation. There's just a strong motivation to adopt. So we believe people will want to have their own servers. The compliance with GDPR, the European data regulations, are virtually impossible without this kind of protection. There really is nothing that currently meets those privacy requirements, and the legislation is spreading. It's going beyond Europe to other places, even though there's no really viable technology in the market today to implement the kind of data security that the regulations require. So I think once FHE is available in a form that's high enough performance, it'll be very quickly adopted, and the impact will be even broader than just the data security that it provides. It means that now you can usher in the whole era of AI and machine learning. With FHE, you can build machine learning models based on encrypted data. So all of the challenges of getting people to disclose their personal medical data now can be overcome because you never have to see the data. No one sees the data. So you can develop diagnostic models based on encrypted data. And even more important is the ability to build a machine model and then rent it out to users with the confidence that the users can never reverse engineer the model. Both the model and its data stays secure. So the model creator can sell that same model again and again to other people, let them use it on site. Eric Chen at SoftBank, the lead investor here, has suggested that this is what's going to make data the new oil. Businesses will spring up just selling information without disclosing it. And then you think beyond that, what about people who make manufacturing equipment, for example? I know when I was in the semiconductor industry, we never wanted to let the equipment manufacturers get access to the sensor data from our machines because they could reverse engineer our processes. And so we kept it secret. But if you can keep it secret by encrypting it, then they can run their models on it. They can improve the yields for their customers. They can do predictive maintenance. They could change their whole industry. They could give away the machines and just charge for the maintenance because only the manufacturer has access to all the different machines in all the different locations and can build a model based upon a diversity of data that's very intelligent and that can do things for the machines that you could not do as the only owner. So I think it's very, very revolutionary.
Yeah, you know, security is the number one issue, and there's so many aspects of it. And you can't go by a day without some type of security breach being talked about in the news and such. And, you know, I honestly don't know how we're going to be able to address this quickly enough. And AI is always also going to complicate this. But you know, it's nice to see, you know, innovative new technology in the security realm, and especially when it's silicon-based. So, you know, domain-specific security processors, I think it's high time. So, excellent. So, Wally, the big question is, you know, when is your silicon back? When is this going to be available?
So we haven't disclosed the date, but it's not going to be far in the future. And we're not without competition. There is a program that's sponsored by the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, to challenge other companies to develop an accelerated FHE capability. There are four companies competing in that, including Intel, all developing architectures, testing them, and ultimately one of those will be awarded money to go develop a chip. There are all sorts of well-known companies that are actually introducing products. Microsoft, for example, had a product called Election Guard. I guess they still do. It was used in the 2020 elections because for FHE, the operations like addition can actually be performed very rapidly. It's only when you get into the complexity of multiplication and sorting and other things where you get this million X slowdown. But there are applications you can do today. They're demonstrating that. And IBM has a whole program of converting customers' applications to run under FHE because of the demand, particularly in the fintech community. Financial services needs to have the data security and wants to keep their data encrypted at all times. But also the entire US government and Department of Defense would like to do the same thing, as would biotech companies and others who deal in different types of secure information.
Hey, Wallet, you mentioned Eric Chen. Is that Eric Chen from Breon? I mean, he's a semiconductor guy, right?
He absolutely is. Founder of Breon. Eric, a very innovative guy. I did end up being introduced to a lot of people across the whole venture capital world. But I have to say, Eric is one of the most innovative. And he's been on this theme of data security for a long time. He's participated in funding of other companies, and he's one that is able to look ahead and see the enormous impact and see where the barriers are. And so when I came in contact with Eric, he actually was selling me on the importance of what we were doing. And it was only a matter of time. And so I was introduced to Masa, and SoftBank led the round, and others were very anxious to join in. SoftBank's a great endorsement to have, and they're a great company to be working with as we move forward.
Yeah, I remember, by the way, I never doubted you could raise this money, Wally. So, in fact, I said, if anybody can do it, Wally can't raise $50 million during the pandemic for security. But it really is an impressive round. I did see the press release on it, and having SoftBank lead the round certainly is quite an achievement. But, having Eric involved, that's also very notable, because he's a brilliant, brilliant man. I've seen him speak before. And so congratulations. So you got the award, you got the $50 million. Now what are you going to do, Wally? Are you going to Disneyland?
So, Daniel, I'm going to be a very busy person for the next year or two, and it's great to be busy. It's an industry that we both have spent our careers in that provides so many different opportunities, but it never gets old. New things keep popping up. Every time you think that the growth rate's going to level out and it's going to be a 3% growth industry for the future, all of a sudden something new comes along, a new set of people get into the business of developing chips, a new technology becomes applicable, a new material, growth in silicon carbide and gallium nitride, all sorts of things are going on. And it's just a great kind of industry to be in. You never have to get old, because the new technology keeps you young.
Yeah, I was on a call with a bank this morning, and they asked the same thing, as, Moore's Law is dead. Moore's Law is dead. We can't scale anymore. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And, I used to believe that a long time ago. Like, remember when a beam of light, you know, it was only a certain size, and we couldn't go on beyond the beam of light. And then lithography came, right? And you know, after that, I stopped doubting, you know, the semiconductor industry. But you know, as you said, there's so many more challenges ahead, but there's so much more exciting technology that's around us. It's an exciting time, and for you, I think it's been 50 years, over 50 years, right?
Pretty much. I left Stanford in 1972, so that would be exactly 50. But I was involved in semiconductors before that, working on my thesis.
Yeah, you know, I just celebrated my 40th anniversary with my wife, and that's when I got into the semiconductor business. So it's always in front of me. So it's how I remember, because if I ever forget my anniversary, I'll get killed. But yeah, I just celebrated 40 years. It's just such an amazing time, you know. And I don't remember being any more excited back then than I am now. I mean, really, truly, this is an incredible time for the semiconductor industry. And, you know, Konami is just one of the examples. I mean, we're not dead by any means. We got so much more to do.
I agree. It's a great place to be. I'm really honored to be getting an award to make me part of that. And I'm just delighted to be in the forefront with Konami and able to work on something that can have a major impact on the whole world.
Well, while you were one of our first podcast guests, and you are today the highest listened podcast guest we have. And so we'll definitely have you back to get an update when you guys get your product out and see how things unfold. So thanks again for your time. This is a good stopping point. Thanks everybody for listening, and we'll speak with you again next week.
Thank you, Daniel.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day. We'll be right back.